Hello everyone, you're welcome to another exciting edition of Breakout with BD. My name is BD Nelson, I'm your host for the show. It's exciting because last week we had a very interesting topic which we analyzed, and we had Shai Vigiasa from an organization called Freedom in Canada that is fighting this heinous crime called human trafficking. And this week, we're also going to be having another exciting guest on the show. And guess what? You will not believe it. She represents the Sex Workers Outreach Project for the United States of America. And it's such a honor to have her here with us today. But before I introduce our guest for the show, I'd like to talk briefly about what today's topic is all about. And basically, we're going to be looking at the implications of the legalization of prostitution on human trafficking. And you know, this talk about legalization of prostitution has caused a lot of arguments in time past. Basically, issues range from stigma to morality to the acceptance of sex work as a legit business. A lot of people believe that prostitution should not be allowed as a profession to proliferate or even be recognized. And some others believe, especially people with strong feminist view, they believe that a woman has a choice to decide how to earn a living, and she could decide by earning her living through sex work. And so they believe if you are a prostitute, you have a right to self-care, you have a right to self-esteem, you have responsibility to yourself, and you also have a right to be respected in the society. So today we're really going to break this whole enigma called prostitution, and we're going to be talking deeply about the implications of its legalization and how it's going to be affecting human trafficking. And we're going to be focusing majorly on forced prostitution. So let me not waste much of your time, and let's introduce our guest for the show today. Her name is Kate DeAdamo, and she does a lot of work for SWOP USA, which is an acronym of the Sex Workers Outreach Project USA. And she's really active in this work, and I really, really am so excited to have her on the show today. So let me just get to it. Kate, you're welcome on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored to be able to speak with you about this.
I'm excited too. Thank you. I would like you to just tell us briefly about the rationale behind the legislation and the decriminalization of prostitution.
Sure. When looking at the decriminalization of prostitution, there's really kind of two prongs that we're talking about. The first is really a philosophical debate, a theoretical debate about the agency of a person to decide how they're going to make their living. And especially when we're talking about, two adults engaging in sexual contact, whatever reason they decide to have that exchange and whatever the parameters are around that exchange, that's really, a private interaction between two people making a decision for themselves. And so whether that interaction involves money, does not involve money, is really, there's no reason to criminalize that interaction. Also, we're really talking about harm reduction. And for people engaged in the sex industry and engaged in sexual exchange, there really can never be a safe way to go about it as long as it operates on a black market system. And so beyond kind of the philosophical debates, we simply believe that prostitution, it is the oldest profession in the world. Every single country in the world has prostitution, no matter how criminalized it is, no matter the stigma that people face when engaging in sex work. Every single country in the world, you're still going to find, despite the culture, despite the laws, some level of prostitution. And so with that in mind, the question is, how do we make this a better industry? How do we make this a safer industry? And how do we make this a better experience for the people involved in this industry? And the answer to that is really to be found through decriminalization, through legalization, and through lowering the boundaries that people experience, lowering the harms that people experience when engaging in this kind of work.
All right. And what's your experience or knowledge, as the case may be, of forced prostitution? Because basically, when you're looking at human trafficking, many of the victims of human trafficking are usually trafficked for the purpose of forced prostitution. So they are actually into sex work against their will. They are into this industry against their own consent. So what's your experience or knowledge of forced prostitution, especially as it relates to minors?
Sure. So my personal background, actually, before I got involved in sex worker activism, I was involved in migration work, especially around low-wage workers. And so what that means, especially in relation to this, is that I worked on trafficking, but from the other side. I did everything that wasn't the sex industry. You know, I worked with farm workers, with people, with domestic workers, with people who were, you know, dishwashers and busboys in restaurants. And actually, the studies that have come out, one study that came out from the U.S. government said that when looking at trafficking, human trafficking, only one-third, and they thought that actually might have been a bit high of a number, only one-third involved trafficking in the sex industry. So, before we even talk about this, I think that it's a really, if I've learned anything, it's that it's a fuller discussion, unfortunately, that often gets had, and that there are, when we're talking about trafficking, there's a lot of different shades and layers. What the Sex Workers Outreach Project does to address forced prostitution, especially as it relates to minors, is to really be allies and to promote empowerment of sex workers. We don't, because we're an empowerment organization, you know, everyone within our organization is of age. So especially as it relates to minors, we really ally with organizations doing incredible and amazing service work, such as YWEP out of Chicago, for people who are minors involved in the sex industry. And so my background, and if I've learned anything, it's really that trafficking is a much larger discussion than the sex industry. And I think trafficking is a very specific conversation for which sex work is a very is a much smaller part than many people talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, the reason why I was really bent on having you on the show was because a lot of people believe that when you're talking about forced prostitution, you really should be talking about guys who are you know, fighting against human trafficking. And I feel that if we're going to be fighting this war against human trafficking, we really have to go, you know, we have to cut across the board. We have to unturn every stone. So if we're going to get maximum help, we have to make friends or allies, as you've made us understand, with as many organizations as possible. And an organization like yours certainly should not be an exception. And now, do you think that the legislation or decriminalization or regulation of sex workers can result in an increased number of women and children forced into prostitution against their will?
Definitely not. And a lot of the studies that have come out of, especially New Zealand, which decriminalized, I think, about 5 years ago, the studies that have come out have said that there's absolutely no increase in the number of people trafficked into prostitution and into sex work. You know, I think that assumption is that as soon as you legalize or decriminalize this, you know, it's going to explode and everyone's going to be out there engaging in sex work and looking for sex workers. But that's simply not the way it works. I think any time that you take something that is forced to be on the black market, forced to operate really underground, the more you integrate it into a more visible economy, the more you remove stigmatization around that work, the easier it's going to be to find people who have been who are survivors of trafficking. The easier it's going to be to get those people services and get them out of those situations. So I think that legalization and decriminalization of sex work is really going to, you're going to see more people able to leave sex work who aren't meant to be there. I think when we talk about trafficking, at the end of the day, we're really talking about access to opportunities, and we're really talking about poverty in those instances. And so if we want to talk about lowering the rates of people being trafficked into whatever industry, whether it be sex work, domestic work, or farm labor, we really need to be talking about providing better opportunity, providing better information, and not necessarily criminalizing their industries and forcing those people to operate more underground and more in the dark as far as being able to reach out to services and to law enforcement and to people who can get them out of those situations.
I think I agree with you, and especially basically, you know, one of the concerns of many of these organizations that fight against human trafficking is that once you legalize or decriminalize the sex industry or you decriminalize prostitution, you're going to have a proliferation of illegitimate brothels where you're going to have a lot of pimps who are just going to be out there trying to, you know, look and procure as many young and naive girls into this industry. So that's the major concern. Do you think this is something we should be bothered about?
I mean, I think this is always something that we should be concerned about, but I don't think legalization or decriminalization is going to increase its numbers. It's going to make it any easier to happen. It's just not what we've seen. Anytime you completely prohibit something, all of a sudden you've removed every opportunity you have to be involved in that business in a legitimate way. As soon as they took prohibition off of alcohol, you didn't see an explosion of minors getting drunk in the middle of the day. You know, it's just not, this is the only industry where we talk about it in those terms. And so I think that when we look at sex work, we need to look at it as a business industry. It's a financial arrangement. And so we need to look at it the same way. We would never talk about this in any other industry as far as, you know, we see certain levels of trafficking in, I'll go back to farm labor, but we're not talking about decreasing that by getting rid of farms. And so I think it doesn't make sense that we look at an industry and we separate it so much from other industries that we would never address trafficking the same way in.
Okay. And looking at your stand looking at your position on this matter, would you consider forced prostitution a legitimate business?
Definitely not. Anytime that, you know, one person is actively exploiting another individual, it's of course not a legitimate business and nothing that we would ever support. You're not going to find someone who's actively involved in this industry who's comfortable seeing someone who's not willing to be there doing this work. I think one of the most important things that we strive to talk about more is that, you know, whether you are an abolitionist doing anti-trafficking work, or whether you are all about sex worker empowerment trying to do anti-trafficking work, we're both trying to do anti-trafficking work in the best way that we can to minimize the harms to survivors of trafficking.
I think you're right. Now, to what extent do you ensure the registration and monitoring of sex workers in the United States? And also, do you have any statistics on them so far?
Well, the U.S. And no state in the U.S. actually does any kind of registration or monitoring of sex workers, especially within prostitution in the U.S., simply because it's a black market industry. There's a lot of challenges to trying to get statistics or numbers, and unfortunately, a lot of the numbers that have come out are really challenging and have a lot of problems to them. The Government Office on Accountability released a study a couple years ago that actually said there's really not decent information out there either on trafficking survivors or trafficking programs. And because of the nature of sex work, because of its stigmatization, as well as kind of the transient nature, you know, you can engage in sex work for 2 weeks at a time when you're between jobs, or you can be doing this for 10 years. And just because of the nature of this profession, the statistics as far as how people engage in sex work and the numbers of people engage in sex work are really, really flawed numbers.
Well, what about states that have legalized sex work, states like Nevada? How well are you operating in that state?
Well, that's actually one of the main misconceptions. Nevada hasn't actually legalized prostitution. They've developed a brothel system, which is a very restricted system, and you cannot operate independently out of that. And so because of that, you know, there's a lot of concerns about labor violations in there. There's a lot of concerns about working within that, but it is a model that's definitely given us a lot to think about, and it's definitely more progressive than a lot of other states, even though, of course, you know, every model is going to have challenges with it. So within that, it's still very, very narrow. There's only specific counties that are allowed to operate brothels, and they're very highly regulated.
I see. So what is SWAP USA doing to counter forced prostitution and the practice behind forced prostitution?
Sure. You know, we operate a little differently than a lot of the anti-trafficking models that are in the U.S. right now. We believe that sex worker empowerment is really one of the best ways. It empowers sex workers to stand up for their rights and to demand better working conditions. And also, you know, it allows sex workers to realize that they deserve much better conditions, whether, you know, they're in this job by circumstance or whether they really love what they do. Empowerment and recognition that you deserve a certain quality in your work life and you don't deserve to be in a situation that you're uncomfortable with is one of the best ways for people to come forward, for people to be able to gain agency and demand more from their work. So that's kind of the main tenet of what we do, and we believe that through decriminalization, through legalization that we do push for, that is, you know, some of the best ways to address forced prostitution. What we're doing right now is a couple of different things. Right now, SWAP USA operates a national hotline for sex workers. Whether they want advice, support, just someone to talk to, they can call in. And so through that, we've actually identified a couple of different cases of forced prostitution, have been able to provide them services, provide them information, and give them to the right people. Because a lot of times, especially in prostitution, one of the main things is, why would you come forward if you're in a precarious situation, if you've been engaging in, unfortunately, illegal work? You know, there's not a lot of incentive for people to come forward and say to a police officer, well, I think I've been forced into this. I'm not sure of my circumstances. I'm not sure what's even considered trafficking, and I'm going to admit a crime to you. And so it provides a place where people can reach out, talk to someone about their circumstance, and have someone on the other line who can give them resources and refer them to services. Some of the other work that we're doing is more legislatively focused. And so in terms of policy, I know in New York, I actually work with the New York chapter primarily of SWAP USA. And in New York, we did some work around a bill called the Vacating Convictions Bill, which allowed New York State, which does not wipe your record clean. So if you have a prostitution arrest and a prostitution conviction on your record, that stays on there forever. And so the bill, which actually just got through, we're really excited about it, cleared prostitution arrests, prostitution convictions off the records of trafficking survivors survivors who were declared, you know, trafficking survivors. So it was a really great way to allow people who had been through this kind of experience a little bit easier of a transition out of the industry and into something that they're more comfortable doing. And so we stick to, you know, not just empowerment, but recognition and removing stigma and visibility around the issue to really address situations of forced prostitution.
Yeah, and something really caught my attention. You mentioned the hotline. Mm-hmm. How well have you been able to communicate these hotlines to brothels, for instance, to people in the sex industry? What media or what mediums are you using to communicate these hotlines to people in the sex industry in the United States?
The hotline information really has been disseminated through our chapters. How SWAP USA operates is that it's a national organization with chapters in different cities on the ground who are do community organizing, who support sex workers in their area. And so, you know, we've been able to disseminate it through some of the media work we do through our chapters when different people in the chapters do outreach. Unfortunately, we are a completely unfunded organization. And so outreach and staffing the hotline has been really difficult. And so, you know, we do the best we can with the people we have on the ground, and everyone who reaches out to us, we let them know all of the services that we have to offer.
Well, that's interesting. And also, we really would want these hotlines disseminated to as many people in the sex industry. And I can understand the constraints you may be having, but I really wish you luck in this regard. Now, what services do you render to victims of violence as a result of prostitution?
Within our individual chapters, the reason or how they really came about is that in each city, there was really a need for community organizing, a need for sex workers to come together. And so one of the most important things that we are able to provide for people who have experienced violence is a support network. One of the scariest, one of the most uncomfortable, one of the most unfortunate parts of prostitution can often be the isolation that people feel. You know, not only do you all of a sudden generally work alone, but there's so much stigma and there's so much discrimination that it's really hard to say to the people in your life, I do sex work. And, you know, if you can't tell your friends, if you can't tell your family, if you can't tell the people in your life, that's a really isolating, really place to be. And especially if you've experienced violence, just having a support network, people who you can go to, people who aren't going to judge you, is really powerful. You know, one of the most painful things that you can hear as a sex worker who's experienced violence is that you deserved it, that this is something that you signed up for. And that is a prevailing assumption that, you know, if you engage in prostitution, you knew what you were getting into. And that is so hard to hear when you're making this decision. And so a non-judgmental space can really make a big difference in people's lives. Beyond that, of course, we offer referrals to different services, different harm reduction services. In many, many cities and many, many states, we have connections to a lot of different groups who can do direct service, whether it be counseling, healthcare. But those services are, of course, limited by where you are. Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say something. And so beyond that, we also are advocating in different cities, advocating with law enforcement, with different organizations, to try to address that, the violence. One of the things that a lot of different cities are trying to work on right now is figuring out, you know, if you are assaulted, whether it be by law enforcement, whether it be by a client, you know, this happens on a fairly, it can happen on a fairly regular basis. And it's very difficult to report because, especially if it happens during a transaction, you know, it's very hard to go to a police officer and feel like you're going to be taken seriously, or go to a police officer and not fear that you're going to be the one arrested. And so one of the things that's happened recently that we had been working on was in the United States, we just went through the Universal Periodic Review process, which is where the UN comes in and evaluates the human rights record of every member state. And last year, the U.S. Went under the microscope. And so we were lucky enough to have a recommendation come in to address violence and sex and access to services for sex workers. And so after a very arduous process and a lot of work and a lot of lobbying, SWAP USA was one of the organizations, along with a lot of several other sex work organizations in the country, that actually got the U.S. to accept that recommendation. And so the federal government has said that over the next 4 years until their next U.N. review, they're going to be working towards addressing violence and addressing access to services. And so After, so using that mechanism and using, you know, the connections we made during that process, we're really hoping to figure out a way to better address violence in a way that promotes harm reduction and allows people to feel comfortable to find, seek redress for assaults, for violence, for wrongs that have been happened against them.
You know, this stuff about stigma and you know, wanting to tell people the kind of job you're doing, especially in the sex industry, has actually been the reason why the crimes against many of sex workers, many of these people have continued unabated. And we'd really like to know at this point, what's your rapport with the authorities, you know, especially the police, so far, you know, after considering the work you've done, the recommendations you've gotten, you know, and the organizations you're affiliated with, what's your rapport with the authorities, you know, so far?
Complicated. You know, it's definitely an interesting relationship, and it's one that I think is really important. You know, when a lot of the things we're talking about is about developing better relationships with law enforcement and developing different relationships with law enforcement. And so it's something that we're focused on and something that's incredibly important to the work that we're doing. And it's something that is ever, ever evolving. In New York right now, I'm not sure how much your audience has heard, but in New York, we are dealing with, on Long Island, there is a serial killer who it looks like he's been targeting sex workers. And sex workers are actually a prime target for a lot of people because of the stigma, because of this assumption that, you know, no one's going to look for a sex worker, because of the assumption that the police aren't going to investigate, that they have no family, and that it's going to be a very long time before anyone even notices that they're missing. And that's simply wrong. And so I think it's a relationship that things like this really develop and really get us in a place where, you know, law enforcement wants to catch this person. We want, obviously, law enforcement to catch this person, and we're really committed to working together with law enforcement and with the police to do it. We've recently asked them for amnesty for sex workers in the area to be able to feel more comfortable coming out, giving information, talking about, you know, if they've had a negative experience. And so, you know, with this experience, just as an example, it's a relationship that I think is essential to our work moving forward.
And with the ever-evolving nature of this relationship, I can understand how critical it is to your work and the progress of your work. Now, can you give us a list of organizations that your organization is affiliated with, and those organizations that are your allies and that you have been using as weapons or as mediums of outreach to people in the sex work industry?
Sure. On the ground, in different cities, every chapter really operates based on the conditions in their city. And so I can tell you, in New York, we work with a lot of harm reduction groups on the ground who do a lot of outreach to different organizations. We also work with groups such as the Desiree Alliance, Best Practices Policy Project, Different Avenues, and those groups, which do a lot of really amazing work around this issue, and we are just so proud to partner with and ally with in this work.
And so what advice would you give to victims of forced prostitution, and basically victims who just don't see any way of getting out, people who feel that, you know, the stigma is there, the societal indifference, societal opposition, these are factors that they know are there. And what advice would you give to them to help them come out and reach out and get help and redress as the case may be?
I think if, first and foremost, I think if someone is engaged in a situation where they're forced to engage in behavior that they're not comfortable with, I mean, reach out. There are harm reduction services across the country that do amazing work, who are very supportive. You know, reach out to someone you feel comfortable talking to. Just find someone, and someone will listen. And, you know, ask to be connected to services. Ask for what you need, I think is the most important thing. You know, not being isolated, being able to connect to someone else is really the first step to getting out of that situation. I think secondarily, the most important thing I can say is that, yes, there is stigma. Yes, there is discrimination. Yes, it is a very difficult road. But, you know, there is absolutely no reflection on your self-worth for engaging in this kind of work, no matter what your reason, no matter how it happened, no matter how long it happened. Never allow that stigma to be internalized. Never allow that discrimination to be internalized and feel like it's any kind of reflection on who you are, on what you deserve. I think is the most important thing that I could pass along.
Thank you very much, Kate. And let me ask you one more question. It came to my mind in the course of this discussion. You know, many of these victims of forced prostitution actually do not have education. Many of them are actually, like I said earlier, are victims of human trafficking who have come from other countries. They have no affiliation or relationship with anybody whatsoever in the United States, but they find themselves here and they want to just, you know, make a living. They want to just survive and go through with it. And at the end of the day, when there's light at the end of the tunnel and they can probably get help and all of that, I'd like to know what your organization is doing to empower these victims. Do you probably do trainings? Do you have workshops? Do you do seminars? Do you give them some form of education so that they can have jobs, keep jobs, or anything you can do to help them speeding up repatriation back to their home countries? Do you do any of such things?
Right now, we're not a direct services organization. What we do is really to, you know, we know that there are amazing organizations out there, and they do amazing things as far as, you know, education, health services, counseling services. And so what we do is we bring together for empowerment. And through that, we refer people to the amazing organizations that we work with who are able to provide those direct services. You know, people coming out of this situation have so many different needs, whether it's immigration needs, whether it's education needs, whether it's housing needs. And to better position ourselves, we would rather refer to services who are able to provide those things more directly. And so I know in New York, you know, we have a very long list of different amazing places that they can go, whether it's for immigration and legal support. We're blessed with the Sex Workers Project, whether it's harm reduction services, whether it's counseling services. We are able to provide those references and provide connections to those resources. And we feel that that's the best place for us to kind of add value in this area.
That you're really doing a fantastic job, and I'm so happy to have you on the show today, because you just open our eyes to another side of the work against forced prostitution. There's a lot of societal internalization of values and ideals that really would not make people want to look at things from your point of view. But honestly, it's been fun. And it's been a huge eye-opener having you on the show today, Kate. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I hope you don't mind if you would come back to the show some other time and do another excellent job.
Well, thank you, Bidume. I really can't thank you enough for having me on the show and letting me talk about the work that we're doing. I would absolutely love to come back whenever you would like to have me.
Thank you, too. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
Right now, we'll be going for a short break. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to Breakout with BB. We just had Kate DeAdamo on the show doing a beautiful exposition on the implications of the criminalization of prostitution on human trafficking. And right now, we'd like to move to On the Job Again, our exciting edition, where we talk about stuff that pertains to entrepreneurs, how you can make the best of your job. And last week, we were looking at a couple of factors that can hamper or hinder your success as an entrepreneur. And this week, we'll be continuing in that stride. Like we said, many people have this fear about, can they do well as an entrepreneur? Can they make it in the job? Do they have what it takes to be successful on the job? And we talked about a couple of fears that some of those people have as a result of this. And this week we'll continue in that stride. And we're going to be looking at another fear, which is the fear of financial failure. And like you know, when you are hitting it up as an entrepreneur, you're starting out all by yourself, there's this issue of capital. And basically, when we're talking about capital, we're looking at those resources you need that can get you on the right track, that can allow you have the necessary resources you need to be able to execute the job. Now, the thing about capital is you wouldn't find many people who will be willing to make money or funds available to you when you're looking for capital. But then you do have some things that can make you succeed irrespective of the availability of finance or not, or the non-availability of finance. And one thing that you should never forget is look into yourself. Look into yourself. The basic thing now is, it's not just about, do I have the money to make this business work? It's not just about, do I have the money to get the needed resources to make this business work? But you do have some other things that can make your business successful. Sometimes we have people that have the money but have no ideas of how to, the things they could invest that money into to become a successful project. And we have you who have the idea of a successful project, and what you need is the resource. So whenever you have that barrier or that void in getting finances to execute your dreams, to execute your ideas, then you need to do what I call connecting yourselves to the necessary points where you can get the needed finances to execute your dreams or your vision. So as an entrepreneur, relationships matter a lot. Relationships matter a lot. You need to make yourself visible. You need to make yourself visible. You need to talk about yourself, the things you can do, your abilities, your competence, your education, those things that will make people want to invest in you. So you have to sell yourself. So it's not just about you having that money, because honestly, there is no angel that is gonna give you money to make it, you know, that will give you the funds to hit it out, you know. But then you can sell yourself, you can make yourself the attractive for people to invest in. And that is one thing that every entrepreneur should never forget. So it's not just about, I don't have the money. It's not just about finances. It's more about the ability to sell yourself, the ability to focus on your strengths, to make your strengths visible enough for people to want to invest in. And with that, you can take care of challenges in the financial sector. And then another thing that really bothers a lot of entrepreneurs is this issue about taking risk. Now, the thing is, many people would rather not take risk because they believe with risk comes the ability to, or the tendency rather, to make a loss. So many people would like, oh, when it comes to taking risk, I really don't want to be a part. I don't want to be a part of that. But the thing is, if you're gonna be an entrepreneur, you must be a big risk taker. You must not shy away from taking risk. You must not turn your back on risk. You know, there's this talk that businessmen say that the higher the risk, the higher the returns. So it's important you learn that once you visualize an opportunity and you're able to visualize the risk attached to that opportunity, it's now left to you to weigh that risk in your stride and decide on the amount of risk you're willing to take. But the truth is that as an entrepreneur, you can never, never hide from taking risk. It's part of the job. It's part of who you are. And the thing is, you just cannot turn back now because of the fear of taking risk. Because if you look at it, look at where you're coming from, you think about the massive downsizing and layoffs that many people have experienced, look at the lack of jobs, look at the high rates of unemployment and underemployment. This is just the only way to go. So go for it. Face the risk. Look it in the face. Dare the risk. Take that risk. But take calculated risk. Don't just take risk without measuring its consequences or measuring its effects on your business. As an entrepreneur, you must take calculated risk. But I tell you, you must be a big risk taker. So that will be that about on our segment on the job again, where we just finished talking about the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. We looked at the fear of not having capital or not having financial resources to start your business. I've also looked at the fear of taking risk. And next week we'll finish up this topic, the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. And until then, guys, please do not hesitate to go for your dreams, to accomplish your vision, and to make the world what you want it to be. I'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere. guys, you're welcome to Breakout with BD. We just finished our segment on the job again, where we looked at the deadly fears of an entrepreneur. We're going to be hitting up with another segment, which I call Angels on a Mission. I must apologize to you. Today, we're not going to be bringing news on Breakout for some technical reasons, but then it will come on in our next show. So let's hit it off with Angels on a Mission. And I'd like to use this opportunity to celebrate a man, a brother, and somebody I would call a friend. He's been doing a lot of remarkable work in Nigeria. He has a group called Realize Niger, and this group has been really, really effective in reaching out to youth and making people, parents and their kids, and even the youths alike, to rise up to their responsibilities, to discover who they are on the inside and become the best that they can be. Recently, he decided to go to a secondary school in Akure City in Ondo State, where he took time to teach the students in the final year of that school, those in the senior class. He took time to teach them on some of the things that they will be doing in their examination. They call it the West African Examination Council. It's called WAEC here. And he took time to teach them and also train them on other things you need to do to be successful in life. So this man has been doing a remarkable job in reaching out to youth. He also organizes a lot of events, especially at the end of the year, where he celebrates the talents of young people. So he encourages young people to really discover who they are on the inside. So permit me to celebrate my friend and my brother. His name is Mr. Ireti Adeshida. He's doing a fantastic job, and he's going to be our angel on a mission for today. And after this segment, we will come back with the details of our show next week. You don't want to miss that. I'll be right back after this break. Do not go anywhere. Hello guys, you're welcome back to Breakout on BD. We just ended our segment, Angels on a Mission, and it's been fun while it lasted. Next week, we'll be considering the future of the street kid. You know, many people consider street children a menace to the society, and for good reasons too. Many street children are responsible for the crimes and notoriety recorded in many neighborhoods today. In Nigeria, for instance, they are termed as area boys. But whichever way you say it, these kids can have a better shot at life. It depends a lot on our concerns and our commitment in saving these children. So in our coming show on July the 26th, we'll look at the future of the street children. We'll look at what the world holds for them tomorrow. And we have come to the end of another exciting show again. I'd like to use this medium to inform you of a major change which I mentioned earlier. And the major change is about the timing of the show. You might get a change in information which you would be informed when you check on the station's website, but tentatively, starting from the 26th of July, Breakout will be the air on Station 2 every Tuesday by 8:55 p.m. The break in the area will allow us to improve on our game and serve you quality radio experience that you'll never forget. Now, don't forget that this world can be a better place for every child. It's up to us to be that change that is right. It starts with our intention. I love you all. Take care and bye-bye.